Welcome to a Katra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Okay, so if you're looking for a really stark lesson in how revolutionary dreams can just, well, sour into something truly awful, Animal Farm is probably where you'd start. We're diving into George Orwell's classic today. It looks like a simple fable, but wow, does it pack a punch. A universal warning, really.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a foundational text. And Orwell. Well, if you want to understand how political truths get twisted, how language gets weaponized, he's just indispensable. He famously aimed for that style, didn't he? Prose like a window pane.
Yeah, exactly. Clear, direct. Designed to show you the truth, not hide it behind fancy words.
And that clarity, I think, is what makes Animal Farm so, so effective. It cuts right through the jargon.
It really does. Now, we need to set the scene a bit. Historically speaking, the context is just so important here.
It's everything. Animal Farm comes out in 1945. World War II is just ending. And it's a really direct allegory for the Russian Revolution back in 1917. And then, crucially, how it all went wrong under Stalin.
And the kicker is, he wrote it when the Soviet Union was Britain's ally against Hitler.
Right. Which made it pretty controversial at the time. You can see why publishers were nervous, can't you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Criticizing a major ally during wartime, that took guts. Orwell was pointing out something inconvenient, something people weren't ready to hear.
He certainly was. And, you know, that background really frames the core question of the novel. It kicks off with a simple conflict, the animals versus the humans, Mr. Jones.
Uh-huh.
But almost immediately it shifts. The real question becomes, once you overthrow the oppressor, can you actually build that equal society you dreamed of, or is the cycle just doomed to repeat itself?
A chilling question, and the book answers it methodically, step by step. So let's start at the beginning. Manor Farm, it's run down, neglected. Mr. Jones is mostly drunk. The animals, just tools, basically.
Yeah, lives of pure drudgery. And into this misery comes Old Major, the wise old boar. He plants the seed, doesn't he? Shares this vision of a world without humans, a world run by animals for animals.
And he teaches them that song, Beasts of England. That anthem becomes this huge symbol of hope.
It really galvanizes them. So when Jones gets drunk and forgets to feed them, it's the final straw. The rebellion just sort of happens spontaneously.
They drive the humans out, smash the tools of their oppression, rename the farm, Animal Farm. It's this moment of, you know, pure joy, pure hope.
Absolutely. And they try to lock that hope down, codify it with animalism, the Seven Commandments, equality, solidarity, all that.
But like you said, the cracks appear almost instantly. The pigs, Napoleon and Snowball, step up as leaders, which makes sense. They're the clever ones. But then, the milk and apples.
Ah, yes. The first subtle power grab reserved for the pigs. And how do they justify it?
Enter Squealer, the propaganda machine.
Exactly. He smooths it all over. Says the pigs need it for their brain work, to keep Jones away. It's the classic ends justify the means argument used for the very first time. Fear is the key.
It's so insidious. It's not just stealing food. It's undermining the core idea of equality right from the get-go. But, you know, things do go well initially. They manage the harvest and they win the Battle of the Cowshed. Snowball's leadership shines there.
That victory sort of papers over the cracks for a bit. But it also sets the stage for the big split, doesn't it, between Snowball and Napoleon?
Right. The two leaders. Snowball, he's the idealist, maybe representing Trotsky, full of ideas for improving the farm, education, modernization, and of course the windmill.
A windmill, such a potent symbol. Progress, technology, maybe even leisure time for the animals. That's Snowball's dream.
And Napoleon, he's the Stalin figure, much quieter, more cunning, not interested in debates, just power. Building his base behind the scenes.
And it all comes to a head over the windmill project. There's that big debate. Snowball's passionate. He's convincing the other animals.
He's winning the argument. You feel like maybe, just maybe, the dream is still alive.
But Napoleon doesn't play by the rules of debate, does he?
No. He plays dirty. He unleashes those dogs, the puppies he secretly trained, his own private army.
Terrifying. And just like that, Snowball is chased off the farm, hunted down. Democracy, or whatever passed for it, is finished. Gone.
And Napoleon takes absolute control. No more meetings, no more votes. And then the hypocrisy.
Oh, it's stunning. He immediately announces they will build the windmill after all, the very project he mocked.
It's brilliant in a terrible way. He opposed it to get rid of Snowball, then adopts it to control the animals through hard labor. The symbol is completely flipped.
And Squealer is right there, rewriting history on the spot. How does he manage that? convincing everyone Snowball was a traitor from day one.
It's just relentless propaganda, isn't it? Backed by the fear of those dogs.
Exactly. Constant repetition. Questioning the animal's own memories. Are you sure you remember that correctly, comrades? And always, always playing the fear card. Surely you don't want Jones back.
Facts become irrelevant. Only the party line matters. It's that theme Orwell hammers home. The abuse of language. Mm-hmm. Controlling the narrative is controlling reality.
And life under Napoleon gets harder, not easier. More work, less food than even under Jones sometimes. Brutal labor, especially on that windmill.
Then the windmill collapses in a storm.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was just badly built, who knows. But Napoleon doesn't hesitate.
Nope. Instant scapegoat. Blame Snowball. It's the perfect tactic. Create a phantom enemy to unite everyone in fear and hatred. Keep them looking outward, not at their own situation.
And that fear leads to the purges, the public confessions and executions. Animals forced to admit to crimes they didn't commit. Collaboration with the traitor Snowball. Then slaughtered by the dogs.
That scene is just horrifying. It utterly destroys the original spirit of the revolution. Any sense of safety or solidarity is just gone.
And they even ban Beasts of England. Can't have a song about hope when the regime runs on fear.
Right. Now, amidst all this, we have to talk about Boxer, the workhorse.
Ugh, Boxer. Probably the most tragic figure in the whole book. He represents the loyal, hardworking, but maybe tragically naive working class.
His strength is incredible. His loyalty is absolute. But his blindness, it's heartbreaking. Those two maxims he lives by.
I will work harder. And the really devastating one, Napoleon is always right. He just can't see or won't let himself see how he's being exploited.
He pours everything he has into the farm, into Napoleon's regime, believing the propaganda. It shows how dangerous blind faith and a lack of critical thinking can be, especially when faced with systematic deception.
While Boxer is breaking himself, the pigs are getting more and more corrupt, moving into the farmhouse,
sleeping in beds,
wearing clothes,
bringing alcohol, all the things they originally condemned.
And every time, Squealer's there, sneaking out at night, literally rewriting the Seven Commandments on the barn wall.
It's so blatant. No animal shall sleep in a bed becomes no animal shall sleep in a bed with sheets.
No animal shall drink alcohol becomes no animal shall drink alcohol to excess. It's not just lying. It's twisting the foundational laws to legitimize their own decadence.
And the absolute lowest point, the ultimate betrayal, involves Boxer. He finally collapses. He's worked himself to death, basically. His lung gives out.
The pigs put on a show of concern. They promise to send him to the vet in Willingdon for treatment, a peaceful retirement.
But Benjamin, the cynical old donkey who hardly ever speaks, who sees everything but says nothing, this time he speaks up. He sees the van coming to take Boxer away.
And he reads what's written on the side.
Alfred Simmons, horse slaughterer and glue boiler. The Knacker's Yard.
Chilling. They sold their most loyal, devoted follower for, what, money to buy more whiskey?
Pretty much. It's the absolute rock bottom, the total collapse of any shred of morality or revolutionary principle.
And right after that, the final nail in the coffin of animalism. The Seven Commandments are painted over.
Replaced by just one single, mind-bendingly contradictory commandment.
All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others. The doublespeak is complete. Inequality is now enshrined as the law of the land, using the very language of equality.
It's horrifyingly perfect, isn't it?
Hmm.
And that leads us to that final, unforgettable scene. Years have passed. The farm is, well, it's prosperous, but only for the pigs and dogs.
The other animals are still working hard, still hungry. And they look through the farmhouse window one night. The pigs are having a dinner party with the human farmers.
They're walking on two legs, carrying whips, playing cards, drinking, laughing with the humans.
In that final line, Orwell just twists the knife. The creatures outside looked from pig to man, and from man to pig, and from pig to man again. But already it was impossible to say which was which.
Full circle. The revolution has ended up exactly where it started, just with new masters. The oppressed became the oppressors.
It's such a powerful statement on the cyclical nature of power and revolution, isn't it? It's not just about Russia 1917. It feels timeless.
Absolutely. So if we're boiling down the core messages for someone trying to understand this book, number one has to be the corruption of absolute power. Power itself seems to inevitably corrupt.
Mm.
And second, maybe just as important, is the power of propaganda. Squealer is, in many ways, as crucial to Napoleon's rule as the dogs are. Controlling the story, controlling memory, that's key.
It really highlights how a population can be manipulated, especially if they're not educated, not critical, perhaps a bit too trusting like Boxer. It shows that freedom isn't just won. It has to be constantly guarded. Vigilance is essential.
So the novel basically teaches us that these grand utopian ideas, well, they can curdle pretty quickly once naked ambition and power seeking get involved.
Yeah, and it's a stark reminder that freedom is incredibly fragile. We need to be constantly skeptical, especially of political language, to avoid falling into the same traps. That leads to a really interesting question for anyone reading or listening. What do you think was the more dangerous weapon in Napoleon's arsenal? Was it the brute force, the terror of the dogs, or was it Squealer's slippery, insidious manipulation of language and truth? Something to chew on.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.